It's Wednesday, February 4th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 135 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name is Chris.
All right.
Well, Dan, you watched some Gundam, like random big robot. Well, it's not random. It's actually the most popular big robot anime series.
Right. So I'm sitting there watching TV last night.
Gundam's pretty big.
Adult Swim had just finished one program. I don't even remember what. And Aqua Teen Hunger Force was coming up later on.
Sure.
But there was like 15 minutes of something like Squidbillies or out. It's some crap.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? I can't watch this. I have to channel surf off. So I switch over to Sci-Fi to see what they're showing. And what they're showing is Mobile Suit Gundam 00.
I've never seen it.
Yeah. I don't know if the 00 is supposed to be like odd or I don't know. But the point is that's the name of the show. It was ghastly.
Oh, most of them are. I love anime. And I really dislike Gundam.
Well, you know, I think there are two reasons that I struggle so much to like anime.
Mm-hmm.
One,
there's so much crap out there.
That's part one, is there is so much bad anime
out there.
And the second thing,
I love anime.
Is
love it.
The elitism and exclusivity of its hardcore fans.
And, well, that, I agree with you. Anything with a good established fandom around it, fanboys are scary.
Well, it just seems to be worse in anime, I guess, because on top of hiding behind...
It's more popular.
Well, though. But it's not that. It's just more... They're already kind of obscuring themselves behind the shows.
Right.
But then on top of that, they're going to attempt to obscure themselves behind this faux expertise over the Japanese language and Japanese culture.
Yeah, because the Japanese animated entertainment is so representative of Japanese
and
culture.
They can't sell themselves fans. They're otaku and they...
Do you know that in Japan, otaku is sort of a mild insult?
Yeah.
It means obsessed.
And rather than grabbing little cookie chocolate treats from prairie farms, they have to eat Pocky and...
I like Pocky.
I'm not against Pocky, don't get me wrong. I'm just making a point about the just obtuseness of this culture. But you said there's actually a Gundam that's not so bad.
Yes, there is a... Well, let me tell you about the Gundam that's really bad. I Dan stopped me. He's like, okay, we got to record this. So I was explaining to him about...
This is brilliant.
Like, why Gundam is bad in general. Well, Gundam has been around, I think, since the early 80s. I don't know the exact year. It's been around for a long time. And there is some very, very tacky, very silly Gundam out there. Well, I was telling him, it's like... He's like, oh, and then had this, and then had this, and this odd thing had this and that was silly. I'm like, oh, that's nothing. Gundam has, I kid you not, a robot that transforms into a windmill. And I don't mean like a windmill that blows across the plains and has this powerful wind attack, although it wouldn't be surprised if it did. But it is the defense force of Denmark. So the robots transform into windmills and, oh, there's no robots around. We can attack Denmark. And then all the windmills turn into
robots. See, that makes perfect sense to me.
I'm sorry that it does, Chris.
All right. So I want some of Chad.
So the good Gundam.
Right.
There's a good Gundam that
good
I like.
Gundam.
Good Gundam. There's a good Gundam that I like. It's called Gundam 08th Mobile Suit. And that's the American title. I'm not sure if it has a different title in Japan, but it's actually really good. It doesn't have any of the tackiness from the early 80s Gundam. It's not really trying to sell a toy, necessarily. And it's not really about these big, huge, larger-than-life characters that the show is generally about, because the show is about the big movers and shakers of the empires, and they get some really weird personality. This is about soldiers in the trench, and it's about how a small squad of, you know, giant robots, mechanized robots or whatever, does jungle fighting against another small squad of enemy giant robots, and caught in the middle are guerrilla fighters who don't have any robots. And the guerrillas have like questionable loyalty, and you know, you don't know quite whose side they're on and stuff.
Are they led by Jane Goodall?
No. Oh, not okay. That kind of guerrillas, you idiot. But
I just wondered.
Yeah.
These guerrillas are led by Lin-Min-May.
Yes. Lin Min Mei.
I can only imagine their weapons.
Her weapon is the power of love.
Oh, there you go.
But anyway, this one is actually pretty decent.
Wrong type of gun.
This one's actually pretty decent. It has a has a little bit darker of a storyline to it, and it's about normal guys in the trenches fighting warfare and stuff, and it has cool giant robots fighting each other, and it's a limited series. There's only like 8 episodes to it, and that one's actually pretty entertaining and good. I have seen the entirety of Gundam Wing, though, which is, people are like, oh, it's so terrible, and it's everything that's bad about giant robots, and it's like, you don't understand what it was trying to do. Gundam Wing, in Japan, was trying to be a giant robot anime for girls. They were trying to bring in a female or girl demographic to sell. It had pretty boys and romance and a strong female lead character and that sort of thing, and pretty robots and stuff, and it was trying to appeal to women. Well, when they brought it over here to America, they basically said, giant robots, let's appeal to boys and beat them up, and then it was this weird sort of how they were selling it to us.
This sounds kind of like Final Fantasy X2. I am one of like 4 people in the world that actually enjoyed that game. But I knew coming into it that the whole thing, the review I read, I want to say this was an IGN, basically the entire game plays like a slumber party.
And yeah, because that's the one where it's all female characters.
It's all female characters,
and they
pop
get their
music.
They get their powers by changing outfits.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cuter the outfit, the more powerful it is.
Absolutely. And if you can actually kind of see through that and work past it, then they're really, the story behind the game is actually fairly interesting.
I'm all about games like that. It doesn't interest me to play it, but I'm not the target demographic.
Right.
It's trying to pull more people and more women into gaming.
All right.
So, I mean, I'm all for that.
So, Chad, let me get Chad's top couple anime picks.
Ooh. God, why now, did you ask me this earlier?
I have. There is some anime I like. Okay. For example, I'm a really big fan of Grave of the Fireflies.
Yes.
Very sad movie, but extremely good movie.
I had Dawn watch that movie, and I told her, before we even started, I'm like, listen, you're going to watch this and you're going to cry at the end of it. So I just kind of, prepare yourself a little. And she's like, oh, are you kidding me? It's an anime. Why in the hell would I cry at an anime? You must think I'm nobody. I'm not a cream puff, because Dawn's kind of a tomboy anyway. But we were sitting there, we were laying in bed watching it, and it ended. And I turn around, I'm like, man, wasn't that really good? And she's like, I'm so sad.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a story about two little kids that are orphaned and trying to survive during World War II, and they're in Japan.
Right. At the end, in the bad part.
This has no
Japan magic
and mecha and whatever. Yeah. It's a dramatic movie. Honestly, I would love to see a live-action version, because there's no reason not to be a live-action version. There's no special effects to this.
Right. Grave of the Fireflies is wonderful. So you want a couple of top picks.
Yeah, give a couple of top picks. Because I tell you, every time I turn on the TV and happen to catch anime that's on Sci-Fi or Adult Swim or Cartoon Network, it's just like staring into an ass.
Right.
And there's got to be good stuff out there like Grave of the Fireflies. I'm just...
staring into an ass? Is that really the analogy that you just used?
Chris, have you ever seen the Goatsy picture?
Let's not Goatsy fear the boot.
When I'm watching,
they're staring into an ass and they're staring into the mouth of hell.
yeah, they're staring into an ass and then falling into it.
Because when I'm watching an anime about big robots fighting in space, and the big turning point is that the Trans Am, just like the car, TRANS-AM, the Trans Am is about to run out. This is staring into an ass.
Okay.
If you don't know what staring into an ass is, that's it.
Powerful car, especially if it's piloted by Burt Reynolds.
Before Chad
goes into his thing, though, I got to say something. That's one thing that I've always enjoyed, and I'm kind of picky in the anime that I like, but that's one thing I've always enjoyed.
Staring into butt?
The fan subs, when they get the translation pretty close. A good example is Bastard. Which is a pretty good anime.
It's the name of an anime, yeah.
Yeah, but the fan sub I enjoyed more because when people use their magic in that anime, they bring about the power. They use 80s rock bands as part of their, basically their verbal components for their spells. Okay, so all their spells have attack names. Like there's, I think there's Scorpions, there's, I think Black Sabbath was in there. They drop all these famous rock band names.
Okay, okay, so going back to the original story, when I did catch Aqua Teen Hunger Force, it was the episode with the Moonanites, where they had, I think it was an attack belt that attacked with lyrics from a Foreigner song.
Yes, that's a good one.
And see, but in the commercial release, they didn't use any of the rock names, which was really upsetting because that was part of the funny. That was one of the funniest parts of that whole anime, because there was this guy named Bon Jovina who kept getting his ass kicked all the time.
Jovina.
Okay.
Anyway,
You want to hear an anime pick?
You used to watch.
I'm going to give you, because you didn't give me prep work for this, I'm not going to give you a top five.
All right, but just give me.
I'm going to give you one.
Give me one.
I'm going to give you one, and if people are interested, or if any of you guys are interested, next episode, a couple episodes now, I can give you another one.
Okay.
I'll give you a taste.
All right.
So, going off the theme that you just said, with the it was in space, and they had Trans Am, and they had, you know, silly robots fighting each other, and it was really unrealistic, because robots fighting
in space. I guess the enemies had Camaros.
It just doesn't make any sense. I am going to give you something that's the opposite of that. It is an anime called Planets, and this anime is wonderful. It takes place in space, and it's the near future. All of the technology in it is pretty much today level technology. All of the physics and stuff in it are realistic physics. You know, they don't have thrusters at full blast and lasers that bend and all that sort of stuff. It is about, basically, in the future, that they have space travel, but not in between planets. They have it to space stations and that sort of thing. I think there's maybe a moon colony at most. It's very low tech from a sci-fi standpoint. So there's this space station, people live on it, and there's basically space debris, because we're trying to exploit space. We have lots of things in space, whatnot. Two satellites kind of crunch into each other, creates all kind of debris, you know, little screws and pieces of metal are floating around the atmosphere, old satellites starting to disintegrate, that sort of thing. Well, these are terrible, terrible hazards, because there's no friction. They get going, pulls of gravity pull them faster. Sometimes they don't burn up in the atmosphere. Or you're a rocket and you're hurtling through space, and suddenly this little tiny screw hits the windshield of your spaceship and it blasts right through the crew compartment. And it's terrible, right? And this is a really terrible space hazard. So the characters that are followed in the show are basically space trashmen. They go out and they find these little bits and pieces of space junk, and then they collect them. And they are a very necessary and important service. But because we're trying to exploit space and make money off of it, it doesn't make any money. It doesn't produce any money. So they are understaffed, underfunded, looked down upon as space garbage men, and only the rejects are allowed to do, are allowed to do it. So you have this motley crew of people who comprise this, and they're treated like crap and stuff, and it's basically just about their adventures in space. And it's a character-driven story. It's got a great plot to it. It's got great animation. It has no magic. It has no flying robots. It has no outrageous stuff. Everything is done very realistically. There's no sound in space. It's all that sort of stuff. And it's funny. It's excellent. It is a great all-around anime. I recommend it to anybody.
Right, I'm going to ask you for one other recommendation.
All right.
Because there's something we said a couple times, and I think people are going to take our descriptions as an opinion, which they're not. So to demonstrate that these are descriptions, not an opinion, give me an anime recommendation that does involve magic or flying robots or whatever.
That's really good?
Yeah, that's really good. Because I don't think, with anime, for me, realism is not the determiner of quality.
Right.
It just so happens that the ones we're bitching about aren't terribly realistic, and the ones we're endorsing are, but that's not the reason why our endorsements are falling that way.
I would say Last Exile. Last Exile is excellent. It is probably one of my top five animes. The magic in it is a combination of sort of clockwork punk, art deco, very subtle magic, and just a really all-around good story. It is about this alternate Earth. It's not even Earth. I mean, it's this alternate planet that's Earth-like, has huge airships in it, has these sort of airship fighters. Everything is done in a clockwork Art Deco style. It has space pirates and stuff. It has a wonderful story to it. All the characters are lovable. You really care about what the characters are doing. And it creates this world, this sort of story, and this universe that is deep and rich and interesting, and it's all done in a story arc in a limited series, right? It's not one that goes on and on and on and on forever till you're ready to barf. And it just is wonderful. Last Exile is excellent. Great character design, great airship and spaceship design, like fighter. They have like these sort of fire jet designs and stuff. And it's just wonderful. I love Last Exile. It's a great anime. If you have not watched it, and you're a fan of anime, treat yourself. Seriously, it is one of the better animes out there.
Got two topics for today. We may not get to them both. If we don't get to them both, we will pick the other one up probably the episode after next. Because next episode, the cast is going to be a little bit screwy. If things work out the way they're supposed to, I believe, Chad, you're not going to be here.
No, I cannot make it.
John will be here, and Ed Healy will probably be joining us again, but this is all kind of up in the air. Depends. There's a lot of people are still trying to figure out whether they can make it or not. So we'll probably pick this up again the episode after next. Before we get to those, two quick announcements.
Yes.
First off, I wanted to give a shout out to Kevin over at Heroes of Lesser Earth comic, and I'll link that in the show note. They made a reference to us in their comic, so I feel at least I can do is show some love back. For anyone that's interested in this whole Web 2.0 thing, Chad has just started up a Twitter feed for Fear the Boot, which I believe right now is being used mostly to announce changes at Fear the Con.
Yes.
Like when a new game gets put up there.
Pretty much what I intend to use it for is any kind of show news, anything that's interesting relating to the show. It's whatever the www.twitter.com/fearTheBoot. I'm going to try and keep up with it. I'm not really going to tell you guys what we're having for dinner before each recording.
Right.
But I will tell you guys what the topic is going to be. Like, I just updated it recently because I update on my phone. And as we're talking, you know, what our topics are going to be, what we're talking about before we even start recording. I make fun of Chris a little bit, and I'm going to try and keep up with that and keep it going.
Chris, let's talk about one of the greatest follies that you and I are both guilty of. The folly of the GM handout.
Oh, GM handouts. Love them.
You're getting ready to run a game, or maybe it's even midway through the game, and you put together a little write-up, maybe a big write-up, that you hand out to your players. Now, let's talk about what we've included in some of those. I've done like little newspaper articles, little things that are supposed to be kind of teaser feel pieces for the setting. Yep. I've done synopses of the setting or the story so far, depending on exactly what I'm running.
Okay.
Rogue's gallery of major people that are out there. Heck, for one game, I even did advertisements. Maps. Chris, what's some of the crap you've given your players?
Well, let's see. I've done similar things, not necessarily articles, but I've given out little tidbits that their characters have picked up whilst about town, broken up by characters. Everyone kind of gets some of the same stuff, but each one of them gets at least one or two things that are completely different. So it kind of gives a little bit more for them to talk about. I've given out, maps, given out, letters that they may have found, journal entries, that kind of thing. I think probably the most extreme I ever went to
was a picture of your butt.
Was a picture of my butt. No, it was, and I'd put an M on each cheek. And, no. But,
Mom.
the most,
depending on your perspective.
Yeah, I'm kidding. I was doing when I was doing a handstand. So. But that's a completely different story. But no, probably the most extreme handout I ever gave was I had our weekend sports anchor at the time at the old TV station I used to work at. Okay, this was for Shadowrun. I wrote up about three or four different news stories and basically gave it to him. We put him on the news set and put a camera on him, popped a tape in a tape deck, and then had him do it as if he was doing a news broadcast from,
Chris,
you know,
That is awesome.
I want to mock it, and I can't.
It's too cool.
That's really cool.
And the thing was is that he in there, you know, was clues and whatnot that kind of helped set things up for the next, you know, adventure or two that these guys were going on. And so I gave it to them, and they watched it, and then we kind of, you know, then picked up the game from that point. So yeah, it was very cool, and he got into it, which was kind of neat.
I love it when people abuse things at work like that.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it was like, oh, we'll print a big mech poster out on the, you know, the big plotter at work or something. But no, that trumps them all. That is really awesome.
The closest I've ever gotten to anything even vaguely like that, and this falls very far shy of your glory, is I've had some guys abuse not just plotters, but these large spool-based professional printers to make like wall-sized posters for sci-fi games of maps, like the galaxy map or whatever. Here's the different empires and star systems.
The
and
only
such.
Thing that I've heard that comes close to that, although I think I've told this story before, although again, it's not at that, not to that level, was my history teacher in high school was a Traveler player. And apparently Traveler has these really, really detailed rules on creating a world, like not world creation, but like a planet. Mm-hmm. It's ecology, it's culture, it's aliens, it's, you know, that size, it's gravity, it's weather, it's this and the other and all this. And it's really, really detailed. And he would do a section in his class where he would have all the students use these rules that he would, you know, photocopy and stuff. And they would all make a planet, and they would all do a little write up on the planet of what's there. And he would collect them and grade them and then keep them and then use them in his campaigns.
That's like using Korean animators.
All right. So, Chris, for anyone who's listening, doesn't know, you work for an NBC affiliate.
I do.
So you actually had a newsroom professional newscast made for your role playing game.
So how did you get the news anchor?
Well, I don't want to go and make it sound too extreme. I mean, it was done after the show, so it was real, you know, real simple. Because I couldn't necessarily keep the whole crew hanging around doing this. So it was, you know, put him there, stationary camera, and doing that. Now, also related to that too, I would sometimes on feeds, I would make sure I would always dub off any war footage feed in the event that I might have to use that as background information. Because I had plans in my head that I was going to have the characters, again, this is for Shadowrun, chase down some sort of third world warlord. And then I wanted to then provide video of here's this guy and his troops in action, that kind of thing. But I don't think that ever came to fruition. But
just think nowadays, you know, you could even do that at home with a little bit of like video editing stuff.
Oh,
that
wouldn't be that expensive.
Oh yeah, because you could take like some Iraq war footage of some of our boys getting off an APC and they're firing their guns, and then you edit it and you have like laser beams coming out of the guns.
Yeah, I mean, it would never look quite as good as what Chris is talking about, but I guess you could at least get it to like, oh, the level of the clips they have in Command and Conquer.
Yeah.
Of like the news shows they have in there.
What I would do if I knew that I was technologically limited in a certain sense like that, then I would turn that around to make it be purposely low tech, you know, so you have make it so you have a justifiable reason to have that shaky camera footage if you need it, or you know, that kind of thing. And so you just take that angle rather than the high gloss thing, you go for the lower end thing.
Okay, Chris, I gotta ask, the anchor who did this,
yes,
was he part of your group? Was he in the end? Did you have like some dirty pictures on him? Like how did you actually convince him to do it? And well, if he's not a gamer, what was your explanation to him when you're saying?
Well, at the time he wasn't a full-on RPGer. He was a gamer. He played board games more than anything else in war simulations. He was an advanced squad leader junkie, and I believe he still is today. So he really got into ASL, but we would all often, and he would lead these, we would play B-17 down in the, because the newsroom in this building was in the basement. So after hours, we would often play B-17 down there, which was a blast because being gamers, we couldn't just, you know, basically just have this flying B-17 and just roll dice. We all had to make up personalities and names for the planes and whatnot, you know. So, I mean, you know, one guy had the crew basically of Next Generation doing their thing in this B-17. We just, you know, had a lot of fun with it. So he was a pseudo gamer, and so explaining him the setup to him wasn't that difficult, and he was more than happy to do it. And he eventually then did start playing RPGs. In fact, he played a Templar in Deadlands Hell on Earth who was just hell on wheels with a sword. The guy, honest to God, rolled so many 20s. I thought his dice was loaded, but it didn't matter. You gave him a d20, any d20, and he'd crack a 20 out. It was incredible. So he's a very good guy, and he was a good natured sport about it too.
That's cool.
You actually complete tangent here. I'm gonna have to see if I can find this somewhere online. But on History Channel, or maybe it's Military Channel, one of the two, they're starting a new series. You know, like in the past, they've done series where they'll do a series on like ancient wars, and they'll use the Total War engine or something like that. And they did a few of those with first-person shooters. There's one they're doing right now that is all World War II pocket model stuff.
What?
Like, yes, it's like all the pocket models, so just like with parts of the Cursed Sea and all that, except it's like aircraft carriers and Dauntless dive bombers, and I have to find out what game this is.
Huh. Maybe it's custom stuff.
I don't know. Maybe it is, but I have to find out.
That's
Chris, is there any way that you can get that video that you had shot and like put it up on YouTube or something?
I'd have to dig around. I was always very diligent about saving that kind of stuff. And I might still have it hanging around somewhere. It could be buried. Now, I'd love to be able to find it because I remember him doing it. He got into it. And when I wrote it, I tried to make it, you know, very less newsy official and more, you know, street kind of slangy at the time. And we'll see. You know, I don't know how you can debate the success of that or not. But at the time, it was fun to do. So
sure.
All right. So let's get back to the GM handouts. So, Chris, you just trumped anything I could have said. But what other kinds of handouts have you done?
Oh, gosh. You know, if there's anything I can do that can be a handout in some way, shape or form, I'll do it. If it's, you know, if it's taken one of those little cheese ball tourist type cedar chests that you can get at your amusement parks and putting coins in there, I'll do something like that. I remember a few times we would do prop night where, you know, it was required that everyone would have to bring either like some sort of like baguette or something, and we'd have cheese and everybody had some sort of, you know, festive type of cup or whatever, so we could kind of, you know, help to augment the setting, so to speak. But yeah, really, I don't know, it's hard to think of certain specific things I've done, but anything that can help move the game forward or set the mood, I've tried to do. You know, I had a habit of saving. We'd get like stock photos of people, or I'd find other games like your murder mystery dinner party games. They might have like photos of people in there who would be considered suspects. I'd save those to use them as mugshots, you know, for people for other games. Anything like that gives the game a bit more of a tangible feel to it. You know, I would try to put into the game.
I don't do a lot of GM handouts anymore. And the main reason is because I always got one of two reactions.
Because your heart's been broken.
Either nobody really reads it outside of maybe that one guy who actually does his homework. And so I might as well not send it out anyway. Or everyone will read it and study it so carefully and be nitpicking the slightest things, presuming their clues, such that they miss the entire point of what it was I was trying to send out in the first place. Now, the only exception to that I found that still works really well, and I ought to actually do probably more than I do, is artwork. And I guess I'll lump maps under artwork. But here's a picture of what this guy looks like, or here's a picture of what this particular landscape looks like, or here's a map of the city you're in, or the solar system that you're in. Most people are so interested in a visual element for an otherwise auditory and oral sort of game that you can be pretty sure they'll look at. It doesn't take real long. You know, open up three or four JPEGs from an email. That doesn't take nearly as long as reading three or four pages from a Word document. But Chris, what's your experience been with this?
Somewhat similar. And this goes back to a little bit what we were talking about last week. Nobody knows the setting better than the GM. So if you think you're being clever by dropping clues, and this happened a lot with like the town crier stuff that I would hand out to people, is I would deliberately drop clues in that stuff. So that would help them to, you know, help them out down the road. Well, they'd all take that time, like you said, to look at it, but then they really would kind of forget about it after that and not really pay it as much heed as I was thinking they should. You know, so then that kind of left me to scramble to fill in those gaps or to, you know, or to come up with something else to get them to where they needed to go. So I did suffer from a little bit of that similar situation. But, you know, that's really the main reaction I've had, is that it wasn't completely paid attention to. I never really encountered the thing where people would over-scrutinize it. While I like to try and do something to make it integrate with a plot, a lot of it for me is about setting and mood and engaging players. And I'm always of the opinion that handouts do a really good job of doing that. Whether it's, you know, the journal entries where they can all sit there and pore over those and try and figure out, but it's journal entries written in, you know, you take the time to maybe say, make a, you know, a burnt parchment, you know, that kind of thing with the burnt edges around it, or a nicely done map or a photo of something. That kind of thing, because it enhances the mood and enhances the setting. And in a certain way, it helps to immerse the players.
Pat, have you ever had a GM give you handouts?
Yes, I have, actually.
And we're not talking food.
Oh, okay.
Or other charity.
Or secondhand coats.
Here's my old jeans.
Those look really
Here's some pumpkin pie filling. I don't know what you're going to do with that, but
yeah.
All right. Okay. So, man, have you ever had anyone give you a handout?
Yeah, I have. I have played in various games that have done some handouts. I'd say one GM in particular liked to do more of the handouts, and they work. It's kind of along the lines of what you said, Dan. I mean, sometimes it really worked as well as what Chris was saying. Sometimes it really worked and also helped us to get into the immersion into the game. But, and then sometimes, you know, you would either gloss over it, or just maybe he was being a little bit too clever and you wouldn't be able to get out of it what he intended. I think from a player's standpoint, which is what I can provide here, is that if you're going to do the handouts, you need to keep it simple. I think that's maybe the best thing to do. You know, don't try to be over elaborate or whatever. If you keep it small and keep it simple, make it relevant to the point, and it should probably work. I also think that it depends on the experience level of your players. If you're playing with some, you know, some longstanding role players that are used to this kind of thing, they will probably have a much better chance of getting out of it what you intend. If you're playing with brand new players, really novices, they would be the ones that would over scrutinize it and be, you know, either looking at every little word or just not even get it at all. Like, oh, it's just fluff. Look at it. And then boom, it goes away. That being said, I have had good experiences with the handouts that I've had. They've been pretty cool.
Let me ask you, you know, you made the point of keeping it simple. And, you know, going back to the reaction you guys gave when I talked about, you know, having the recorded newscast, clearly that's not simple. That's very, you know, in a certain way, that's very over the top kind of thing.
It's simple to consume. It may not be simple to make, but it's simple to consume.
It's simple to consume, but quite honestly, I guess your guys' reaction when I told you about that kind of surprised me. So there's a wow factor in doing that. Would the wow factor of that overpower the content of what is in a handout of that sort? So, like, for another example that would be obtainable by most people, if you were to get a piece of, you know, that fake parchment or vellum, you know, so it's brown, it's kind of wrinkled and all that, if you were to write down a letter or something that the characters need to find, and then you hand them that player, that handout, and they unroll it and everything, or they even take it out of the little case or whatever and they unroll it, are they going to be too overwhelmed by the fact of how cool that looks to then forget any kind of the content that's in there? Or, you know, is there a balance that's struck? Because I find it very interesting that you say that.
I will say that I've actually had that very thing happen, the vellum parchment. And in our group, and I would say, I think this holds fairly well. I don't think they'll be overwhelmed with the wow factor of it. I think it's got the proper amount of coolness that what it will do is it'll sort of pull your players in because it's like, wow, this is really neat. It's like a prop. And they will pay a little bit more attention to it, you know, be able to hold their attention more than if it's just, say, on plain white printer paper that you just printed out. So I, you know, that's, and at least that's what it was for us. Like, you know, you had this tangible piece of paper that has the clues on there, and it would have a tendency of it, you know, being passed around the table and, you know, put here and referenced again, because it was neat and that kind of thing. So I think though, with your newscast, which was obviously not simple to put together, but was and simple in the consumption of it, it's something that, you know, you could go back and show them again. Again, I think that's awesome. The fact that I would imagine your players reacted much in the same way. It's like, wow, this is really cool, but you know, we can see that and get what we need from it and go from there.
If you're a GM in this, probably best recommendation I can give you is to put yourself in the shoes of the consumer. Because, yeah, you want to think that everything you'll send out, they'll pay attention to because they're excited about the game. And okay, maybe
they're not going to write 500 pages on their character. They're not going to read your 500 pages.
Yeah, exactly. You send these guys a wall of text Word document Times New Roman 12 point font, 35 pages. They're not going to read it. And so keep it short, keep it visual. You know, I think, Pat, you had a great point there about like using the vellum parchment that even if it kind of gets their attention at first, like, ooh, you know, this is kind of period piece. And then you might actually read what's on it. Whereas if I just hand you a Word document printout, you might read the first sentence and then kind of skim down to the bottom. That's nice, big, too long, didn't read, and it gets put aside. But don't give people something that you yourself would not be willing to consume. And not just in context of how much you love the game, but also how much you have going on at work or at home or what your attention span is.
Where do you guys draw the line at using these handouts because they're interesting and it's maybe a little bit of a plot reveal or some plot hooks and to kind of set the mood? Where do you guys draw the line between that and props? Like, when do the handouts start?
I guess I would draw the difference in that a prop is something you use, whereas the handouts we're talking about are more just flavor pieces or visual aids. Like, if I hand you a parchment and I say, okay, this is what you found on the dead wizard, I wouldn't consider it a prop because really I'm just more giving you a visual aid. It's not as if it's being used in some piece of acting. Mm-hmm. And that's
I could use it in a piece of acting.
Well, you could.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be used that way, but in this context, that's where I would differentiate a handout or a visual aid.
Your handout's a wanted poster, and then through the course of the game, we encounter the sheriff, and it's a wanted poster of me, and I rip it in half in front of the sheriff and throw it at him.
Now it's going from a handout to a prop.
Yeah. But, and is that a bad thing?
No.
I don't think so. It is.
Depends on how much it costs me to make that wanted poster.
Oh, that's true.
Destructive jerk.
If it doesn't, for me, if it doesn't contribute to the progression of the game in the sense of the plot and storyline, then it's a prop. I mean, you know, okay, I bought my dagger at the Renaissance Fair. If I keep that in front of my screen, it's a prop. If there's some sort of etching on there that I plop out saying, this is what you find on the guy's dead body, and they recognize that etching from something that had occurred earlier in the game, realizing, oh my gosh, this guy works for so-and-so because here's this etching, then, you know, then that's a handout.
You know, you don't see it as often anymore, largely because of the death of the role-playing game box set, but you still see it sometimes. The handouts that come with role-playing games.
Right.
Actually, what this kind of reminds me of is the little props that used to come with video games. Like, I remember the old Infocom Wishbringer game. Hammer Wall's in there, but one of the things that was in there was a Wishbringer stone, because the whole game was about this stone that grants wishes. And so in the game, you would find a little white glow-in-the-dark plastic rock that was supposed to make your Wishbringer stone. I guess you still kind of see it someday with like the special editions.
Well, you have to pay. It's all kind of collectors.
Yeah.
Doodads. I think the most common one that you see that isn't like just some little statuette or whatever would be maps. And the maps always
are worthless.
They always crack me up because they don't want to spoil anything or give anything away. And you have to reveal the map as you go. So it's just vague, there be monsters here type.
Yeah.
Maps
here's the general layout of the nations that really doesn't change a damn thing in the game. Actually,
and
the
most
only
games have in-game maps anyway.
The only game I've played that came with a map that was actually useful that you like put on your wall and get some value out of was Anarchy Online.
The only one that I got a lot of use out of was the original 3D Grand Theft Auto, because they didn't have they had a map, but it wasn't very good. You couldn't you actually had to use the map that came with the game. It's like, okay, I want to find the nearest gun shop to where I am. And I haven't discovered any of the locations yet. Okay, there's one here, and I can kind of plan my route to it. Nowadays, the Grand Theft Auto games have, like, sort of GPS navigation systems, and you can, like, set waypoints and whatnot. That's really cool. But, you know, in getting back to role-playing games, you know the most common published handout that I have seen across many different role-playing games is? It is the Mercenary Contract, where it's basically, it's this whole quote unquote legal contract, and you fill in the dates, and then you fill in how much you're going to get paid, and then you fill in the name of the mercenary company, and then you sign it. It's one of the most useless handouts ever.
Not if your game master's running an identity theft ring.
That's true.
Yeah, very true. I don't know, Chad. I might disagree with you on that, because I did the contract thing once. Now, not in a sci-fi setting, but I did it in a fantasy campaign where the characters were getting hired by a merchant to do the specific delivery, and I had him write up his deal and then, you know, make space in the bottom. And again, I did this on pseudo parchment where I really kind of printed a background color on
there. That's one that you're making. And so you could put a lot of nifty, very sort of player and plot specific stuff into it and keep referencing back to it. The ones that are pre-generated have to be very, very generic.
Yeah.
You know, on purpose. And they don't do anything to advance the plot because they can't. You know, they don't know what your plot is.
But what it can do, though, and this is in this particular case for me, what it did is it made my players hesitate. because suddenly, you know, for something that would be a throwaway situation where I'll pay you 50 GP to travel down to this next town, and, you know, most people just go, yeah, okay, let's go. Suddenly, when they actually had to sign their names to a paper, it raised that suspicion level in them. And then suddenly they're reading the contract. And then now they're really thinking about it.
Do you think that changes the item from a player handout to more of a prop?
Well, I don't think so, because in a certain sense, for at least by my definition, it did advance the story some. Or sure. In the very least, advanced their perceptions of the world and perceptions of their characters a little bit. You know, so for me, no, it didn't. But I mean, I could see where you would say that, because right. Really, in the end, did it really have anything to do with it? No, yeah. It had nothing to do with it at all. But it did make them think for that moment there.
My problem with them, and even saying my problem with them is kind of, I don't actually have a problem with them. Actually, I like reading them in the different books and whatnot that I find them in. But I think the one minor issue I have with them is that you photocopy it off, you fill in the blanks, everybody signs their name during the role-playing session or whatever, and then you're like, okay, that's great, and you put it away and you never take it out again. Unless a contract dispute comes up and somebody needs to rules lawyer through the contract. And like I said, I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing or anything like that. I just find them of to be either very specific use or very, very limited use.
You know, forget the game itself for a second. Something I found is getting all that little junk, those little handouts and tokens and such, is that it gets me personally more excited about the game. Not the game as in the sitting or what we're going to play, but I mean the universe as a whole. Mm-hmm. That it's really
it's
cool.
More immersive.
Exactly. It's really cool because I'm a fan of game XYZ. It's really cool having a faction pin from one of the groups in there.
Dan, I'm flipping through the Earthshaker.
Oh, you're going to give me my ticket to ride the Earthshaker or whatever it is?
They have a mini poster that I guess you can show your players, but in here also, I mean, Earthshaker, of all things, has a ticket, because it's this carnival and Earth, yeah, there it is, you know, attend one and all, coming soon, and blah, 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 and it's this ticket, and then, oh, there's a contract next to it, there's a mercenary contract with fill in the blanks and everything. That is hilarious.
That's awesome.
That is great.
You know, Chad, let me ask you something, though. Let's say that we lived in Iowa or whatever Chris is.
Oh, God.
All right, let's get past the other problem. So we go over to Chris's house to game.
Uh-huh.
And you walk in and Chris is going to run. I don't know. Let's just
Chris wearing pants?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's just pretend that Earthshaker was good.
And Chris
is going to run a game of Earthshaker. And you come in and he's got the whole thing kind of set up like a carnival. And he's got a few props here and there. And it's not that per se we're going to act any of the scenes out, but it's just to kind of draw you into the mood that from the minute you walk in, you're sort of in that mindset of this is where you are. And when you sit down at everyone's place, there's a ticket that the innkeeper had been holding for you that someone dropped off the night before or whatever. If for a minute we try and put aside the thumbing the nose of we're too good for this or whatever, look into your heart of hearts. Does this actually help?
I think it's all about delivery. I think that it can both help or hurt. I think if the delivery of this is really corny, and I also think it's a groupthink thing, because I think that I could come in there and maybe I think, well, this is kind of cool and different, and I'm kind of for this, and everybody else is too cool for school.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had those gaming groups. That annoys me more than anything else is when...
If you're playing a role-playing game, get over yourself.
No kidding.
You've already lost the I'm too cool for this thing. So
please try new things. Try something that doesn't seem like it'd be cool. The too cool for school thing is the total buzzkill. And that's not the game master. And that's not, I guess it's my own weakness. But, you know, there's a certain group psychology. Whereas if everyone's sitting around the table going, oh, lame, then, you know, am I going to stand there holding it? Woo! Ticket, woo! I'm going on Earthshaker. Then, yeah, it doesn't quite work. It's kind of like a horror game. in that, you know, because horror game is all about setting a mood and the delivery and how you deliver the scary, right? Because you can't.
So if you come over anymore. And I've got a dead hobo on the table.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cthulhu. I'm in.
Like lice and all.
Yes, sir.
Chad, why do I visualize when you're doing your woo, I got a ticket for Earthshaker, why do I visualize you whipping your hands and swinging your hips around?
Because he was doing exactly that.
Like he's okay. Doing this whole podcast from a mechanical bull, if you didn't know.
Right. All right. Yeah, I like the ideas that you've talked about. Even something as small as like some like little kitsch type things or kibble. I've been trying to think of a specific example, but like I know in games past, like our group has become like they've received a like a ring from the king that, you know, designated them as like a emissaries, you know, for the king or the kingdom or something like that, depending on what you're able to find, or if you have access to this kind of thing, or you could find something that would be kind of cool, or even like a rank insignia pin if you're playing like a Battletech or something like that. You know, when somebody it goes up in a rank, you could present them with like the pen.
Well, sir,
again, it's kitsch stuff, but to me, that would be awesome. I would take that and keep it.
Well,
you know
what's hilarious right now is that all the LARPers who are listening to this are busting a gut laughing at us right now because it's like, oh, they're so cute. They're flirting with props. How quaint.
That's the one place I did not want any of this to go.
How quaint as they sit there in their capes and fangs and elf ears in the middle of the forest with their iPod,
so we're just
waiting for the adventuring
so we'll
party to walk down the trail
out.
So
really
that the orcs run down into them and kill them.
Well, let's just back it up. That's
no,
fine.
Yeah. So, but along those lines, you know, let's say you're playing a sci-fi game, something mm-hmm. like Battletech, whatever. Every time they complete a mission, you give them a campaign ribbon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go down to like a military surplus store, give them a campaign ribbon. And by the end of it, they've got their own little box full of these things or whatever. Something actually we're doing right now in the Skies of Glass game is when we first came up
when
with.
When we get shot, you take out your gun and shoot.
I do.
Us.
I just cap an ass right across this, blam. And then you can describe the injury and tell us how you feel about it.
No, I'm not really buying it, Chad. Oh!
And then the police come and join the LARP, and it's, you know, it's great. It's great.
Short campaign, let me tell you.
Moons over Miami, Grand Slam breakfast, people getting shot. I mean, what is not to like?
Hey, man.
But one of the things we're doing is when we first came up with Skies of Glass.
I loved Moons over Miami.
Years and years and years ago, we were running it in a setting where there was very little to have. No industry, not a lot of supplies, and so you took care of everything very carefully. It was very common for players to have guns for which they had no ammo.
In fact, my character had two 357 Magnums, right? I mean, total cowboy, blow your ass away, right? And I could afford the guns, but I could not afford the ammo. And so in most role-playing games, you'd be like, well, why the hell would you ever do that? Just get cheaper guns. But it was so fit so well in that setting that I would walk onto the scene and I'd just be bluffing. I got nothing. I got no ammo, but
so
I got these guns.
What we would do is if someone was role-playing really well or really adding to the quality of the game, that we would say, instead of XP or whatever, we'd say, give yourself a bullet. And they would literally write a bullet down.
Yeah, and then we were like, oh my god, a bullet!
Yeah, so in the readaptation of this game, its current incarnation, which is actually like its fourth incarnation that we're playing right now, for our little luck tokens or whatever, we're just calling them bullets. And you can use them for a variety of things. But what I did was I searched around and I found a place that sells belts, like machine gun belts that you can disassemble of plastic bullets. Mm-hmm. And so now whenever somebody does something really good or gets past a major plot point or really cracks me up, I reach into my backpack, I take out a plastic, I guess it's like a 308 or something like that, and I hand it to the person. And they can later trade that in for dice rerolls and such. But still, it's just kind of something a little bit neat that the players have sitting in front of them, like three or four or five bullets. That
and we kept the thing, too, is the nod to the old days of if you want, you can use it as a bullet. But you in this setting that where we're at within Skies of Glass, it really isn't about, you know, keeping track of it on that level. You know, we all have bullets. We're not really running out anytime soon, but there's still that little nod there. At least it makes me happy, but, you know.
Going back around to the GM handout, I really got to say that something I would like to see more in games, and including my own, I need to start doing this in my own, is pictures, artwork. You know, go online, find a picture of what the main bad guy looks and hand it out. You know, find a picture of a scenic vista and say, this is where you guys are staying, you know, right
and
now.
And that's the thing. It's that kind of stuff is so much easier now than it was even 10 years ago.
A Google image search and you've got it in 5 minutes.
Exactly. And that goes both ways, too. I played campaigns. When I used to run games, I made my players do Google image searches for what their character would look like and had them send it to me. And
I would have always played women in your games at that point because that's the only pictures I ever look at on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Women in fursuits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what else is there to look at?
That's true.
Pat's furls.
Yeah. But, yeah, and that was with my last gaming group. Unfortunately, the current gaming group I'm in, I tried that in my game, and I really didn't get a whole lot of response. I think that there's a little bit of response, but I think there was a whole lot of, I don't understand this. I don't understand the point of this. I'm too cool for school. And then it's like I tried to make, I got a whole bunch of pictures that kind of expressed, you know, the world and the feeling of it. And I think people looked at them and like, oh, those are nice pictures of buildings. It's like, that's not the point. So your mileage, I think when you do stuff like that, I think that it is fantastic. And I am all for that because I'm also a very visual person, too. But I definitely think your mileage will vary on your group. I think some people just aren't really into that and don't care. And you can't force them to do that because maybe they're not visual people. Maybe that just doesn't resonate with them. But I think other people do. Do you guys think that you can do that sort of thing with a mixed group? Say like half your group is really into that and the other half is too cool for school, not into it, doesn't care.
Not really. And see, this is one of the things that's kind of frustrating is, if you have a gaming group, probably just about anything will fly with at least somebody at the table.
Mm-hmm.
But because you're kind of responsible for entertaining a group, then no, you really can't. Because if you have something that goes for a long period of time, like a really big handout, and two people are into it and two people aren't, well, two people are sitting there bored. Mm-hmm. Or even if you do it outside of the game, then what happens is there's information that two people know and two people don't. Now, you can crack the whip and say, well, aha, you won't get as much out of the game, or you won't get the extra clues or the XP bonus because you didn't do the extra work. But I mean, holy crap, it's a game. If it's not enjoyable, they should not lose out for not doing it, because the point of this is to have fun, not shuffle paperwork. This is not a second job. And so I'd really be hesitant to crack the whip with bonus points you can't get unless you do my paperwork.
And there's also another matter of, from the game master perspective, and this is kind of like, I guess, pointing out human weakness, in that you have a table full of 6, 7, 8 people, and you do the handout or the props or the tickets, the mercenary contracts, whatever you want to say. And the majority of the 6 people you have are all for it, like, hey, wow, that's really cool. And you get 2 guys whispering back and forth to each other, rolling their eyes and throwing the stuff over their shoulder. As a game master, believe me, the 4 or 5 other people, it's great that they were into it, but as a human being, you're going to notice the 2 people who are kind of like downing it.
You know what?
And it's unfortunate.
This holiday has to already exist, and if it doesn't, we're going to create it, and we're going to dedicate a whole episode to
Slap
it.
Slap a boring player day?
No. Oh. GM Appreciation Day.
Oh, I am told. I am 100% behind that. And because it will make people angry, I am 110% behind that.
I'm with you.
I'm going to search around and see if I can find a GM Appreciation Day that already exists, because somebody has to have come up with it. And if they haven't, this will be our second Fear the Boot holiday after Worldwide Wing Night.
Mm-hmm.
But we really ought to. I would love to do a whole show on, look, don't be an ass to the GM.
Yeah.
Because they have feelings, too. They are putting themselves out there by running this game. And I don't know. I could go on and on. Oh, and I won't. We'll save that for another episode.
I see you kind of, you're getting that little fire behind your eyes. You're getting a little, your dander
on. I'm looking for my screwdriver. So.
Yeah. We took that. If you notice, it's not around. We took that away from you.
Just calm down and run my game, monkey.
Dance, monkey.
All righty. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. And we will catch you next time.
Maybe Dan will have more inner fire.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com.
You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.